That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
This is the John Fugelsang Podcast.
I'm John Fugelsang. Welcome. This is SiriusXM Progress coming to you live, coast to coast. We are broadcasting live from, where are we tonight? We are in LA and Brooklyn and South Carolina. That's how hard this team works to bring you to the verge of entertainment. But hey, so glad you're with us. We have some great guests. We have a lot to pack into the show tonight. Our good friend Matthew Sheffield's going to be here. Now, Matt used to be a hardcore right-wing journalist. He's not anymore. His sister still is. I know his sister. She's still very right-wing. Matt is very, very sane and cool. He does the Doom Scroll podcast. We've had him and his co-star on our show a few times. But Matt Sheffield has a dynamite piece in Vanity Fair called How I Got Tangled Up in the National Enquirer's Secret Deal with Donald Trump. He was going after those rumors about Ted Cruz having mistresses back in 2016 during the election. And in the process of doing his work, he got pulled into the whole world of David Pecker and the National Enquirer. His story in Vanity Fair is really fascinating, and I wanted him to come here and provide it to us because it does provide some color to what we're witnessing in the courtroom in New York City right now. Also joining us, one of the funniest stand-ups out there, Kate Willett, who is just super freaking funny. She has a terrific new special and an album called Loophole, and she's going to join us tonight. She also comes from a damaged Christian background, so much love to her. The great Rhonda Hansom will be with us as well. I think we're okay. Ready? Chris Hauselt's our executive producer, runs this thing out of South Carolina. The mighty Thea Harper produces our show out of Brooklyn. We got a whole packed week of shows planned for you. And it all ends in Madison, Wisconsin this weekend, when as part of my parole and work release, I will take the stage with Stephanie Miller's Sexy Liberal Save the World Tour. We're playing the Barrymore Theater in Madison, Wisconsin this weekend. It's a great town. It's a great room. We've played the Barrymore many times. We'd love to see you there. If you're in the Midwest, you have 5 days to get there. Our special guests will include John Nichols of The Nation and a true legislative hero, a man who actually did vote to impeach Donald Trump, Congressman Mark Pocan, joins us on stage. That's Saturday night. Go to livenation.com or sexyliberal.com to get your tickets, and we will see you there. All right, let's do a show. Latest ABC News Ipsos poll of likely voters: Biden 49%, Trump 45%. It's a good thing these polls mean nothing, or else I'd be more nervous. NPR PBS NewsHour poll: Biden with 52% to Trump's 47%. You should not believe these, and you should always act like Joe Biden is 10 points behind. I'm sorry, but keep the panic up for another 6 months, and then we'll put this behind us. Republican former Lieutenant Governor of Georgia Jeff Duncan has announced he's voting for Joe Biden in November. And Democrats are already running a lot of ads of Republicans who used to support Trump who are now supporting Biden, with sentiments like the Lieutenant Governor's. Mr. Duncan said, "Unlike Trump, I belong to the GOP my entire life. This November, I am voting for a decent person I disagree with on policy over a criminal defendant without a moral compass." It's a very powerful statement. I think a lot of criminal defendants with no moral compasses would be offended at being compared to Donald Trump, but I'll let it slide this one time. Congratulations to a couple of our friends for winning Pulitzers. Nathan Thrall was here last year with his amazing book, A Day in the Life of Abed Salama, which I recommend very highly if you would like to understand how life in Palestine is on the day-to-day basis. He won a Pulitzer today, and Jonathan Eig from the Journal got a Pulitzer for his wonderful biography on MLK, which is called MLK, and Believe the Hype. It's as good as they say. It was a crazy weekend in news. Thousands took to the streets in Tel Aviv to call for a ceasefire deal, to call for a hostage exchange, and to call on the Netanyahu regime to quit. Now, Hamas has said they've accepted the ceasefire agreement that was put forward by Egypt and Qatar. Israel says they have no idea what Hamas is talking about. Israel's going to attack Rafah. They're going to invade. They're going to do it. They're going to kill a lot of people. Hamas said earlier today, maybe you're like me and you woke up and thought, oh, the world might not be on fire, or at least be a little less on fire in this one fiery corner. But Hamas said they accepted the Egyptian proposal for a ceasefire to stop this 7-month destructive conflict. Hours after Israel ordered about 100,000 Palestinians to begin evacuating the city of Rafah, which means they're invading. This is where everybody fled to. Now they're telling them to flee. So, obviously, anytime you get good news out of the Middle East, don't get too excited. But it was the first positive ceasefire headline I think any of us have seen in quite a while. And you know what? Israel now says the deal was not that Hamas agreed to is not the deal that was negotiated. Israel has rejected the agreement Hamas has agreed to. It's never ending, folks. These people are going to keep on killing themselves and killing themselves. And toxic actors will be trying to divide us as best they can over this conflict. Joe Biden spoke with Netanyahu earlier today about hostage deal negotiations and Israel's plans for the ground invasion. National Security Association spokesperson John Kirby has some details on Biden's morning call with Netanyahu. And turns out the ceasefire was not a hot topic.
Now, as you know, the president talked with Prime Minister Netanyahu this morning. The call lasted about 30 minutes and was constructive. The president reaffirmed his message on Yom HaShoah, Holocaust Remembrance Day. The two leaders discussed the shared commitment of Israel and the United States to remember the 6 million Jews who were systematically targeted and slaughtered in the Holocaust, one of the darkest chapters in human history, and to forcefully act against anti-Semitism and all forms of hate-fueled violence. Now, of course, the two leaders spoke about our efforts to secure the hostage deal, including through these ongoing talks today. During the call, at the president's urging, Prime Minister Netanyahu agreed to ensure that the Kerem Shalom crossing is back open for humanitarian assistance for those in need.
Okay, so nothing. You got that? Nothing. And Israel said that this deal that Qatar and Egypt and Hamas agreed to is far from their requirements. They're going to send a delegation to Cairo tomorrow to have some talks. But if Israel and Hamas can agree to this, this could lead to the release of up to 33 hostages. And it could lead to a brief pause in the violence. Because where are these people supposed to evacuate to? I mean, there's nearly 2 million people in Rafah with nowhere to go. I mean, 1 million have already fled. And for months, the United States has warned against an attack. Netanyahu doesn't care. He wants an attack because Netanyahu knows as soon as this war is over, so is his political career. We're on the verge of witnessing another preventable disaster that will kill thousands of civilians. But ceasefire or not, Kirby says the floating pier that we heard about 2 months ago is ready to deliver aid to northern Gaza.
On the pier, the temporary pier, if you could give us an update on that and whether or not like a ceasefire would need to be in place for that to be fully implemented and operational.
A ceasefire doesn't have to be in place for the pier to operate. Now, obviously, it's a whole heck of a lot easier if there's no fighting going on, but it doesn't have to be. In fact, one of the big issues that we are still working out is what the force protection laydown would look like and how the not just the people operating the pier, but the material itself can be safe from any attack. As far as I know, and again, you should go to the Pentagon for more detail, essentially the pier itself has been constructed. It is not in place because last week they had some weather issues in the Eastern Med, so they weren't able to put it in place. You should go to the Pentagon for like where it is right now. As I understand it, it's still not being put into place.
Oh, Jesus.
Then you got to anchor it, and you've got to make sure you build a causeway so you can get to and from it. So there's still a lot of work that has to be done to get it operational, and that would include the force protection laydown. But no, the short answer to your question is you don't have to have a ceasefire in place to use the temporary pier.
Okay, horrible human being Meghan McCain said, I've never been more proud to be a conservative with a long record of being on the side of Israel and against terrorism than I am right now. However, according to World Food Program Director Cindy McCain, Israel is right now inflicting, in her words, a full-blown famine on North Gaza. Israel is deliberately inflicting a full-blown famine. World Food Program Director Cindy McCain is the mother of horrible human being, Meghan McCain. Now, let's go to some horrors closer to home. You might have heard Donald Trump spoke to a private gathering of rich douchebags in Florida over the weekend. Somebody taped it and they leaked it out. And he says that the White House, the Biden administration, is running a Gestapo administration. Gestapo. They can't decide, right? Like, one minute they're communists and they're Nazis. They can't make up. Dudes, the communists and Nazis didn't get along. If you're going to call them one or the other, choose a lane. Okay, Nazis were right wing, putting that out there. Trump said that's the only thing they have. When you're a Democrat, you start off essentially at 40% because you have civil service, you have the unions, and you have welfare. And don't underestimate welfare. They get welfare to vote, and then they cheat on top of that. They cheat. You know, Republicans could support the civil service. Republicans could support unions. Republicans could support government workers, Medicaid, Medicare. Stop trying to cut those. Republicans could support poor people on welfare. And then those hardworking people would like Republicans. It's so funny how it works that way. Donald Trump also mocked the physical appearance of Jack Smith, the special counsel who's indicted him twice. He said he's unattractive both inside and out. In fairness, most of us are unattractive on the inside. And he also, the former president, called Jack Smith a fucking asshole. I can't wait to see what the next gag order for the next case looks like. But the real point of Donald Trump's soiree over the weekend was to have this pageant of humiliation for all of the underlings who, like sad contestants on Celebrity Apprentice, who were willing to degrade themselves in public for a 16th minute of fame, all, and I mean all, of the rumored candidates for vice president were brought up on stage on Saturday night. They were all in one room, like the whole Suicide Squad. Elise Stefanik, Doug Burgum from North Dakota, J.D. Vance, the eyeliner model from Ohio, Marco Rubio of Florida, who was the first person ever to make a dick joke about another Republican in a Republican primary. That was about the man he's trying to be vice president for now. Congressman Byron Donalds of Florida. Google his criminal history sometime if you get a chance. Tim Scott and, of course, America's sweetheart, Kristi Noem. And they all complied. It was a puppet show. And the puppets danced for the master. Now, here's a little bit of advice to our media, because I love y'all. These Republican folks, we love them. They're our coworkers and our friends and our family. They're lovely people. They live in the right-wing bubble. And it's a bubble of lies. And in that bubble, Barack Obama wasn't born here. And Donald Trump really won the election. And Donald Trump really did create a great economy and didn't just take credit for Barack Obama's economic trends that had begun before he took office. In this bubble, you know how it is, there really are women who give birth to healthy babies after 9 months and then kill them with the doctor because they're evil. It exists in the Trump bubble. And a lot of these folks aren't prepared to leave the bubble and be out here among them English. And sometimes, see, the lies, because in the bubble, you don't get in trouble for lies. You can tell any lies, and you know what you get? They applaud you. The bigger the lie, the bigger the applause, especially on the internet. These lies thrill the crowd in the bubble. The crowd does not ever want to check these, fact check these lies in the bubble. And then the problem is, these people leave the bubble to come out among us English into the world, and doggone it, the lies just don't hold up. It turns out, if you're not in this cult of obedience to Donald Trump, people ask follow-up questions. And even sometimes, are you ready for this? The corporate news media. Now, Kristi Noem is considered by many to be the front runner to be Donald Trump's vice president. I don't think she will be, but I can understand why she's the front runner. She is stupid, mean, and attractive. And that's how Donald Trump operates. It's based mostly on her physical appearance. As you guys know, she's in a bit of a PR situation because she has a horrible book out where she talks about fatally shooting a family puppy. A puppy because she couldn't train it to hunt. And because she's a shitty dog trainer, she shot this puppy in the head in a gravel pit. There are parts of Alabama she could run on this and win. But also, as you probably have heard by now, she lies in her book about a meeting with North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. And this is the fun part. She blatantly lied to the American people to make herself seem more important on the world stage than she really is. Now, an adult would come out and say, yes, I'm really sorry, I got confused, but she can't do that. So I want you to listen to this woman misdirecting. I mean, this is the Image Rehab Tour. Had a few setbacks this weekend, This is Kristi Noem on Face the Nation. I want you to hear how hard she goes out of her way to avoid telling the truth and make it sound like, yeah, so I lied, but it's all okay now. As Margaret Brennan questions her on the lie that she ever met Kim Jong-un.
Did you meet Kim Jong-un?
Well, you know, as soon as this was brought to my attention, I certainly made some changes and looked at this passage. And I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. As soon as it was brought to my attention, we went forward and have made some edits. So I'm glad that this book is being released in a couple of days and that those edits will be in place and that people will have the updated version.
So you did not meet with Kim Jong-un. That's what you're saying.
No, I've met with many, many world leaders. Many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I think I've talked extensively in this book about my time serving in Congress, my time as governor, before governor, some of the travels that I've had. I'm not going to talk about my specific meetings with world leaders. I'm just not going to do that.
You're pushing the book.
This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I made sure that that was adjusted. So the book is not released until Tuesday. And so we're doing all that we can to make sure that those changes are made, and I'm going to continue to focus on what this book is and the blueprint that it lays out for the American citizen on all of the things in the background and stories of my life, but also what I think that needs to be identified in politics and what's broken today. I talk about how broken the money game is, how broken it is that we've got consultants that are getting rich off of elected officials, and
she's
then how fake some elected politicians are.
Sure.
Every single person in this country wants someone in elected office that's a human being that doesn't say they're perfect. I take responsibility for that being in the book. And as soon as it was brought to my attention, I asked for it to be changed. So I'm glad that the release date is in a couple of days, and we're excited to talk to America about my new book, No Going Back.
Okay. If I was Margaret, I would have stepped on her several times in the middle of that. This anecdote shouldn't have been in the book. Those are her words. That's her way of saying, I lied outside the bubble and got caught. We found out earlier that she pitched herself for a top job at the NRA as early as last fall. She offered to step down early as the governor to take a big job at the NRA, like shades of Sarah Palin. She called Wayne LaPierre last fall to advocate to be the next executive VP or CEO of the gun lobby. Boy, South Dakota, this lady really doesn't like governing your state. Here she is again on CBS This Morning. She's still out there. She's still doing this. I want journalists to be tougher than this. Give a listen.
And let's talk first, but we don't want to talk about a lot of the topics that you address in the book. But the book is called No Going Back, but it sounds like the publisher, Center Street, is going back on a couple of the details in the book.
Oh, I don't believe so.
Specifically, when you write in the book, I remember when I met with North Korean dictator Kim Jong-un. I'm sure he underestimated me. That, as I understand, is now being removed from the book at your request.
Yes. When I became aware of that, we changed the content, and the future editions will be adjusted. And, you know, I appreciate that. I've met with many, many world leaders. I've traveled around the world. I should not have put that anecdote in the book. And at my request, they haven't
looked at it. That specific meeting didn't happen?
I'm saying that I'm not talking about that meeting. I'm not talking about my meetings with world leaders.
There is no meeting. It doesn't exist.
That are in the book. With world leaders. There's some that are in the book, and then there's some that's not in the book. Many
of
them actually.
But why are there two specific mentions of meeting Kim Jong-un and talking about him, and a specific memory? I'm sure he underestimated me, having no clue about my experience staring down little tyrants. Did you tell your ghostwriter to write that?
I've specifically have worked on policy for over 30 years. And over that time, I have traveled around the world and I have met with leaders around the world. And that anecdote, I've asked them to change the content and it will be removed.
Okay, you get the idea, folks. You get the idea. Now, it might seem hard to imagine something being more craven and pathetic than that. But then there's tap dancing Tim. Tim Scott went on Meet the Press. And folks, when Kristen Welker does a good job, I will praise her. And this is one of those times. I want you to listen really quick. Tim Scott refused six times to commit to accepting the results of the 2024 presidential election. And Kristen Welker did a very good job trying to hold this guy's feet to the fire and actually make him come out and say he would accept the results. He can't do it because he's not a man. He's not a good person. He's not an honest man. He is a craven, thirsty, mongrel, fascist who will lie as much as he has to try to advance his pathetic career. I want you to give a quick listen. This is, again, from the VP Hunger Games, Tim Scott on Meet the Press. He is committed to never committing to the 2024 results.
There is clear facts here. President Trump himself said he expects this election to be fair, he expects it to be honest, and he expects to win. That's what the presidential candidate should expect, and I expect the exact same thing. And frankly, the American people agree with him. This is an issue that is not an issue, so I'm not going to make it an issue.
Well, Senator, will you commit to accepting the election results of 2024, bottom line?
Well, at the end of the day, the 47th president of the United States will be President Donald Trump, and I'm excited to give back to low inflation, low unemployment.
Wait, Senator, yes or no? Yes or no? Will you accept the election results of 2024 no matter who wins?
That is my statement.
Okay, journalists, it's up to you. Every Republican of every office in every state needs to be asked that question. Because Tim Scott, in case you didn't notice, has pretty much renounced democracy. And it's a pretty safe bet that he is anti-democracy after a statement like that. He won't say he'll follow the law. He won't say he won't help try to overthrow the results of our election. That's terrifying. This is like Star Wars Episode 3 stuff. I mean, these craven sycophants refuse to endorse the rule of law. They refuse to support a peaceful transfer of power. Guys, if you can't respect the outcome of our elections, if your guy loses, you don't deserve to ever hold office. And the best part of tap dancing Tim Scott, degrading himself and lying for Donald Trump, is that 1 year from now, he won't be the vice president. And he'll have to be married to a woman. We want to know what you guys think. We're at 866-997-4748. Give us a call, 866-997-GRIT. Quick break. We'll be right back with your calls and the great Mr. Matthew Sheffield to discuss his new piece in Vanity Fair. This is Progress.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress-them-on-the-third-date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app today to get free delivery on your first three orders, while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
And welcome back. So I'm a fan of Matthew Sheffield. I enjoy his podcast, Doom Scroll Podcast. I've had the honor of being on it, and he's done this show a couple times. I want to quote from his new piece in Vanity Fair. By the time Donald Trump announced his presidential run in 2015, I was well on my way out of the Republican Party. I had grown disaffected with the party's blatant Christian supremacism, indifference to racism and sexism, and knee-jerk hatred of social spending. Today, Trump's criminal trial, which has taken over Lower Manhattan, shines a stark light on the secret deal he made with the National Enquirer tabloid. I found it particularly interesting because I was on the opposite side of the arrangement during my last days as a right-wing journalist and commentator. So begins a dynamite piece in Vanity Fair called How I Got Tangled Up in the National Enquirer's Secret Deal with Trump. Now, Matthew Sheffield is the publisher of Flux and the host of the Theory of Change video podcast and Doom Scroll podcast. And he writes about public opinion, right-wing extremism, misinformation. And he's been quoted in everything from the New York Times to the Washington Post, NPR, NBC. We're always glad to welcome Mr. Matthew Sheffield back to SiriusXM.
Yeah. Hey, great. It's good. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Thank you. It's good to see you. And thank you very much for being here. And thanks for writing this piece. I know it's got to be interesting and dodgy for you to talk about your final days in the Republican machine. And this is a really informative piece that I think every conservative and progressive should read. Now, just so we make it clear up front, you weren't in any way a supporter of Trump back then. And you point out in the piece that the Never Trumpers used to oppose him because he wasn't conservative enough.
Yeah, and it's something that's been lost, I think, in the dialogue now, you know, almost 10 years after the fact that, you know, they weren't mad at him. They didn't dislike him because they thought he was, you know, a sleazeball or a criminal. They thought he was a rhino. And that's why he should not get the Republican nomination. And I was like, you guys are out of your minds. There's a whole bunch of reasons for him not to get it. And that's the very last one.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. You really brought back some memories for me because I recall during the summer of 2015 and early 2016, I mean, he was the best reason to watch those debates. Trump was coming out and he was just playing his bull in a china shop act. But back then, he was arguing for single payer health care. He was telling Republicans why they had been screwed over by the Bushes and shouldn't trust the Bush family. I mean, he was saying all kinds of he was talking about how every Republican on stage was bribed by guys like him. I remember being thrilled at hearing so many stark truths being told at a GOP convention, at a GOP debate, Matt. I think that was back when Trump didn't actually think he was going to win and actually could speak freely, because it's pretty hard to imagine him saying some of the things he used to say on the campaign trail when he first began so long ago.
Yeah, I think so. And, you know, and it did fit. And he always had kind of this mixed political orientation, you know, earlier in his career, like because he first was running for president in the Reform Party, if you remember.
That's
way
right.
Back when. And, you know, he was saying Pat Buchanan, he didn't like Pat Buchanan because Pat Buchanan had a love affair with Hitler and was a Nazi, you know, and was far right. And how he was in favor of, you know, abortion rights and, you know, and like, so all of that's what the people that I used to work with, that's why they didn't like him, because they thought, well, he's going to make us be responsive to the public. He's going to make us have to go with what the majority of Americans want and stuff. Fuck that guy. Who wants mm-hmm. that? And that's, you know, like, that's really what got their ire. And, you know, then, of course, he always had the other part of him, which was, you know, the racist landlord stuff and the, you know, execute the Central Park Five, you know. And so, it, you know, it was he was always willing to say whatever people wanted to hear.
I mean, stealing from vets with a fraud university and a racist lie. The first black president wasn't born here. I could go on all day. But while all this was happening, we didn't know at the time that he was in a very tight synergy with David Pecker, the CEO of the National Enquirer's parent company, and that Pecker had pretty much vowed that his tabloid would act as the eyes and ears of the Trump campaign. So we've learned a lot about catch and kill and how Michael Cohen and David Pecker would decide whose stories would be bought. So anybody who was telling a true story about Donald Trump being an awful husband, they'd pay them, make them sign the NDA, and then bury the story. And they had a good little racket going for quite a while. It's been fascinating learning how this works and learning about the collusion and how they really spent a lot of money to keep information from the American voters. But you reminded me of one of my favorite moments from back then in the Enquirer land, which was what we call the Cuban Mistress Crisis. That Ted Cruz, after we learned his father was linked to the JFK assassination, we began hearing all about Ted Cruz's girlfriends. I remember that story because I did some jokes about it on stage. So imagine my surprise, Mr. Sheffield, to read this article in Vanity Fair and see how much this actually has to do with your hard work. Take us back in time to the 2016 campaign, and you are getting sick of the party. What was it that made you first lean into some of these stories you heard about Senator Cruz?
Well, so I mean, at that time, I didn't support any of these candidates. And so, but the last person that I wanted to get the Republican nomination was Ted Cruz, because, you know, I saw him as a complete grifter, fraud, liar. I mean, everything that Donald Trump is, but so much more smarmy and, you know, minus the insult comic shtick. You know, no redeeming qualities of any kind with Ted Cruz.
Correct.
And, just completely soulless, unethical person. And so,
and by the way, you were still a Republican, you know, when you felt that way. Most Republicans I talk to now feel exactly that way.
Yeah, yeah, I know. Well, that's what it's that saying about Ted Cruz that everybody hates Ted Cruz.
Al Franken said, "I like him." Yeah, Al Franken said, "I like him more than any of the Republicans like him, and I hate him." So, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, and so, you know, I had advocated a lot against Cruz, and I wasn't advocating for Trump, just more saying, don't pick this asshole, guys. And so, right. You know, I was one of the bigger accounts on Twitter, right-wing accounts, criticizing Cruz. And then one day I get hit up by somebody that said, hey, by the way, you know, I know about the stuff that Ted Cruz allegedly did with several women. And so when I heard that, I was like, oh, wow, that would be incredible if that could be substantiated. And, you know, and I had this was literally my last hurrah in right wing media. And, you know, by that point, I didn't have much confidence in these people at all. I'd seen them fuck stories up constantly and lie and, you know, just misread documents and have no idea what the hell they were talking about. Lisa's dog, actually my friend is her. I'm watching her dog right now.
No worries.
She's trying to get a bone in the background. But yeah, and so anyway, you know, I thought, well, I want this story, if I can substantiate it, I'm going to publish it in a right-wing media outlet. Because I don't want them to say, oh, this is a hit job from the left-wing media against, you know, our God beloved ordained candidate Ted Cruz. I was like, no, we're gonna shove this through Republican media. And so I started working on it, and everybody in right wing media, they fucking love this story
because they all hated, you know, Ted Cruz.
Yeah, that's right. And especially the Marco Rubio people, those, you know, they wanted to kick Cruz out of the race. And so once I started investigating and then poking around, the Rubio people, they started talking about my story before it was even published, like months before. And they were calling it the thing. That's what they were calling it.
Now, you do point out in the piece, though, that everyone in the conservative outlets you approached about the story was interested, but they were also terrified. Right. I mean, this guy was a very famous Republican backed by a huge donor network. And you point out if you had come with some bullshit about Barack Obama, they would have run with it. But The Ted Cruz evangelical mistress story, that scared some of them?
Oh, it did, absolutely. Because, you know, at that point, all the oligarchs were either on Rubio or Cruz's side. And there were a lot of the oligarchs who were on Cruz's side. You know, like, people don't know, but, like, the Daily Wire was created to be a propaganda website for Ted Cruz. The owners of the Daily Wire were Ted Cruz's super PAC's number one donors, the insane Wilkes brothers, who are these, imagine the most insane evangelical you've ever heard of. These people are at the top of that list. They literally think that they are the real Jews. And
oh,
Jews.
Okay. Yes. I know those people you're talking about. Now, so I can understand why Rubio was keenly interested in this story, because everyone was thinking Trump would eventually fold and it would come down to a two-person race between Rubio and Cruz. So I certainly see why Marco would care about this quite a bit. At what point did anyone from Trump's orbit first reach out to you?
Well, so unbeknownst to me, there was another back deal, which was between Donald Trump and Steve Bannon. And so they were talking, I was actually talking to Steve Bannon about this story also.
And this is when Steve was running Breitbart, right? This is back when he was running Breitbart.
Right.
Oh, gotcha.
Right.
Go ahead.
Before he was on the campaign, because the other thing about, you know, the National Enquirer deal with Trump was that not only were they going to suppress stories, they were going to be his attack dog as well. And so that's why they kept putting out all these, you know, nonsense stories about, oh, somebody who had Marco Rubio's haircut was at a gay foam fest party, you know, or, you know, as you said, Ted Cruz's father, he was linked to the JFK assassination. Like, that, they were trying to put out any possible smear against, you know, the other candidates. And so, of course, when Steve Bannon, and unbeknownst to me, he was talking to them as well about stuff. And eventually Trump and Michael Cohen put Bannon directly in touch with Steve Bannon, and they were, you know, starting to work together. And so it's tough to say, because, like, I also was talking to Roger Stone, called me out of the blue about this story as well.
Now, what was Roger? Go ahead, please. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, when you're investigating a story, like you have to trawl a lot in order to report a story that is, you know, could get you sued. You've got to talk to at least 100 people in order to get this right. And so, you know, and in my case, I think I probably hit like 200 something people on this story.
Amazing. And without, you know, going after Senator Cruz, was the evidence you uncovered compelling and convincing?
Well, I will say that with one of the women, I was told by somebody who was told directly by one of the individuals that she told him that this happened.
Okay.
And I'll leave it at that because,
of course,
I don't want to get too close to a story there.
We wouldn't want to tarnish Ted Cruz's excellent evangelical bona fides either. Of course, he's a deep man of
faith.
So this is amazing that all of these guys start coming out of the woodwork before you've even published the word that you're just researching. It spreads. I can imagine how strange it must have been to have the National Enquirer call you.
No, it was. And of course, now in retrospect, it all makes sense. Right. And now that in court, we can see what was going on. But yeah, at the time, I was shocked. You know, I was shocked that I opened up my email one day and there was an email from the National Enquirer saying, hey, a gentleman told us that you had information about Ted Cruz, cheating on his wife. And by that point, so this was March of 2016, and I had been working on the story for several months by then. And, you know, I had started coming to the conclusion that, you know, as much as I wanted conservative media to report this story out, they weren't going to do it because they're chicken shits. Like, that's the other thing is that all these guys talk about, I'm a brave truth teller. I'll say whatever I'm uncensored. I will say whatever the hell I want and no one can stop me. It's all fucking bullshit. And
they're all advertising for dude bros. Yeah. They're all just playing the macho game for weak men.
Yeah, exactly. And, and you can see that also even now, like with the, there can only be one person who is above criticism. So like, you know, Kristi Noem and her dog thing, like if Donald Trump shot that dog, it would be fucking wonderful. It would be amazing. Like everyone should be shooting their dog. But only he can get away with that because he's the authoritarian, you know, master leader.
If Trump had shot the dog,
they're all a bunch of chicken shits.
You're right. If Trump had shot the dog, we'd be hearing what a great man he is for aborting that dog and sending it to heaven. Now, you point out in the piece that while it was strange to be contacted by the Enquirer, they had been right about Democratic VP candidate John Edwards and his wife and his affair. So they did have a bit of credibility in this realm. But when the woman from the Enquirer reached out, she offered to pay you for the notes and the draft of the story, right?
Yeah, she did. And, you know, and I did think about it for a little bit. She offered me, you know, to write the story and have, you know, and I was like, ugh, I don't want to have my name on the byline of that story in your paper. but nonetheless, you know, I thought about it because I thought, well, I want this story to get out there, you know, and you guys obviously have millions and millions of dollars. So I'll talk to your people about it. And so we did. And I thought, okay, well, maybe they can develop it a little bit on their own. And then, you know, fast forward like 2 weeks later, they published the thing. And I'm like, what the fuck? and they, as far as the story that I had developed, you know, they didn't really get within a mile of any of the sources that I had, or anything like that. And, but the only person who was quoted by name in the story was Roger Stone.
There you go. But Ted was up to 5 secret mistresses after the Enquirer ran the story, right?
He was,
They bumped him up.
Yeah.
You wrote, reading my research filtered back through the tabloid's breathless prose was surreal, like seeing your reflection in an oily puddle. I can imagine that at the time, you know, you were working your way out of the party. It must have been very surreal and unpleasant and probably one of those memories that you thought you could put behind you and would never have any relevance again, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'm writing a book about all this, you know. So I was born and raised in Mormon fundamentalism. That's how I got into right-wing politics. You know, I was churched into it, and you know, and eventually I left Mormonism, but I kept the right-wing viewpoints, and then, you know, over time, sort of gradually unlearned them, and so, you know, in the process, had all kinds of weird and funny, bizarre stories like this one. So, and you know, after being told so many times by people, oh man, you've got to write about all this stuff, Matt. So I decided to, and this is going to be one of the episodes that I'll discuss even further at length in the book.
Wow. So, I mean, it must have been amazing for you to watch this trial and realize that you were on the outskirts of exactly this whole scheme, that anything they would do, and I'm guessing that you could have had no idea at the time when the National Enquirer reached out. It just seemed like they wanted dirty, juicy scoops on Ted Cruz to sell papers. It was actually because they were quite seriously colluding with Donald Trump to catch and kill any negative stories or amplify any stories that would hurt one of his opponents.
Yeah, exactly. I had no idea that I was, you know, being unintentionally, you know, becoming a, you know, factotum of a criminal conspiracy. And luckily, of course, I didn't commit any crimes, but, you know, I was right in the middle of it and had no idea. And so, yeah, it has been once again, surreal to see all this stuff playing out again. But, you know, it gives me a sense of closure to a degree that you really can't get other than, you know, in a court of law, when people, they have to fucking tell the truth, and they've got to come here, Luna. And they've got to, you know, give the documents. And so, you know, it's all dead to rights there, and I'm seeing it. And, you know, it's a little bit like, you know, watching the world burn in some sense.
I gotta say, Matthew, I find your journey very inspiring. As you know, I'm familiar with your sister. I've worked with her a few times as well. She's still very much in the right wing camp, very nice person. But when I look at the journey that you've had and how hard that must have been and how much very public, personal and political evolution you had to go through, it's just something that I admire so deeply. We see so many people who just double down and seek refuge in the loyalty of cult membership. And I really just think that what you did was really iconoclastic and really brave.
Oh, well, thanks. Yeah, I appreciate it. Yeah, I mean, to be honest, you know, I could have taken the regular Never Trump route and been something, you know, like, well, yeah, I don't like Trump, but the Republican Party, they were just fine before Trump came along. You know, there was nothing wrong with them. We need to go back to those days. And
you could be on the bulwark.
Yeah, that's right. And, you know, and the reality is that's not the answer. And, you know, this is just, you are lying to people if you say that the Republican Party of pre-Donald Trump Republican Party was, you know, was a legitimate party that cared about democracy and cared about the public.
That is it. It is such a pleasure to have you with us, Mr. Sheffield. What is the best way for our listeners to follow you and keep up with all your work?
Well, I would recommend everybody go to flux.community. Luna, be quiet, babe. Be quiet. Shh, come here. got a canine talking points here. So go to flux.community. That's my website where you can get all the podcasts I'm on. And then at Matt Sheffield on Twitter and most of the other places as well.
Thank you so much for joining us. The Peace and Vanity Fair is great. And it's so nice to have somebody else's pets joining the broadcast. Usually it's mine. Thank you, Mr. Sheffield. Have a great evening. We'll be right back with everybody's calls. This is Progress.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
We're going to be joined in just a moment by, oh my God, such an extremely funny human, Kate Willett, who I've had a big comedy crush on her for ages. She hasn't been on the show in years, but holy crap, if you're looking for a really funny album or special to get you through the next 2 weeks, we're going to hook you up. In the meantime, let me get to your calls really quick before we get to Miss Willett. Marie in Atlanta on line 6, thank you so much for waiting on hold. You're on Sirius XM.
Hey, John, thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Let me start out by pointing out that on Friday, April 14th of 2023, so just a little over a year ago, Kristi Noem told the NRA that her granddaughter had her own shotgun and rifle. It was at that point we learned about a rifle for children named the Cricket.
Ah, yes.
And she also said, and she also said that she had a pony waiting for that child named Sparkles. Methinks we should check on the existence of Sparkles right now.
You know what? Can I just give you my theory on Kristi Noem? Life isn't easy, and being a public figure is not easy. And sometimes you realize, oh, maybe I need something in my bio so that sex with Corey Lewandowski isn't the most disgusting thing I can be accused of. And I really think she's done it. I don't think about her being with that disgusting Nazi ever anymore. I just think about her murdering a puppy. So she's changed the narrative. Congrats.
Yeah. What a pivot. What a career pivot.
It's great. Yeah.
But the other reason that I called is because I wanted to talk about Judge Marchand having warned Donald Trump in usually the judge addresses their comments to the defense counsel, not the defendant themselves, unless the defendant has done something that the judge thinks really needs to get, you know, a message delivered directly.
Well, but you're a lawyer. You know it's very common for judges to allow people to violate gag orders 9 times. You know this, right, Marie? Especially low-income people.
Sure.
Especially low-income people, but go on.
Well, here's the thing. He said that he really didn't want to have to put Trump in jail and sort of mused slightly about the logistics of doing so and all the people that would be involved. I think I have the perfect solution. What he can do is, the next time Trump violates a gag order, put him in jail during the lunch period. If you've ever been in a jail and smelled the food that they serve at lunchtime, it is
disgusting. I love you. Marie, I think I love you for that idea. Put him in jail just for an hour a day. It will take him about 40 minutes to take off the suit and put on the jumpsuit. So, I mean, you're saying just put him in a holding cell in his suit, right?
Put him in a holding cell in his suit during the lunch break in court.
For 1 hour. Oh, you know what? For a first time having a president be incarcerated, it's enough for me. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
And he's germophobic, so he'll hate it.
He already hates it. He doesn't like being in civic buildings. He hated the White House for the same reason. I love the idea. Do you think he's ever going to go to jail, Marie? Because I keep telling my liberal friends it's never going to happen. Stop counting on this.
I don't think so. But, you know, then again, you know, if he makes Marchand mad enough, it could happen.
Yeah.
And again, logistically, it could happen at lunchtime.
The judge said to him today, you are a former president and you might be the next president. And I don't want to put you in jail, but I will. No one has ever said those words in that order in the history of America before. It's an exciting time. Thank you, Marie, for the call. It's a pleasure to have you with us. You're so much smarter than everybody on my TV. Right now, I'm so pleased to welcome this next guest back to the show. Like I said, I've had a huge crush on Kate Willett as a comic for a long time. You may have seen her on Colbert, Netflix's comedy lineup. She's the author of the Audible original Dirtbag Anthropology, and she co-hosts the podcast Reply Guys, and she's toured with Margaret and with Maria Bamford. Her new special is called Loopholes. It's out now from Comedy Dynamics, and you can buy the special wherever fine comedy is sold. The album is tight as well. Paste Magazine says, rarely are hours so seamless and satisfyingly funny. Loopholes proves the perfect showcase for Willett's searing wit and indubitable talent. She proves that you can be very deeply political and very deeply female and very deeply funny all at the same time. Fuck you, haters. Kate Willett, welcome back to Sirius XM. Hello.
Oh, thank you so much. It's so good to be here. Can you hear me all right and all that?
I can hear you great. Thank you. It's been way too long since you've been here. We had a plague. I'm so sorry. I love your special. It's delightful. Congratulations on all the great reviews you're getting.
Oh, thank you so much. Yeah, I think the last time I was on your show was definitely Trump era.
That's right.
Probably 2018 or 2019?
I think we were late 2019 or early 2020 before the before the plague. It's been a while, but I love you on social media. You have been one of the bravest people in terms of talking about the morality of what's going on with Israel and Hamas, which we'll get to. That's very funny shit, I know, but we'll get to that. At a time when Jerry Seinfeld wishes he could do more college shows, but he's afraid because his material is so controversial and there's all that woke crap, it is such a pleasure to listen to your record and hear how tight the joke telling is, how uncomfortable in the best ways it makes the audience. And I want to thank you for standing up for the slut community. You do that right out of the gate. And I think it's important that I love the way you redefine feminism while making audiences laugh. Let me begin by asking, how does your mom feel about all the slut talk?
You know, my mom texted me and she said that she thought that the special was good and my dress was cool, but we didn't really get into the jokes. I don't know. I mean, my parents have been seeing my stand-up for like years now, and I would say it's not a radical departure in terms of topics, at least, you know, so they're probably pretty used to it. She just, I asked her when she said she was going to watch it, I was like, I don't want you to get upset. And she's like, you didn't like say anything really terrible about me and dad, did you? And I was like, no. And she's like, okay, that's all I care about. So,
Well, I mean, I just think it's great because, you know, I view the word slut as being the abbreviations for sexually liberated, unapologetic and truthful. And I love that you weaponize the word and take the word back early on while still making it very funny. I was raised hyper-Christian myself. My mother was literally an ex-nun. So I relate quite a bit to your material about deconstructing the sex hang-up faith you were raised in while still being a good person and finding the humor in how awkward sexuality is. And it seems like if there's a theme in this album, it is what you thought sexuality would be as a kid, and then the crushing disappointment it turns out to be as an emancipated adult.
Yeah, actually, I hadn't thought of it that way, but I think that is a good characterization. And maybe not even, I would probably expand it even beyond just like sex and just, you know, into the experience of like womanhood, you know? Because it's like
human relations in general.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's like, you know, I remember being a little kid and thinking about what my life was going to be like as an adult. And I'm like, yeah, I'm probably going to have some husband and we're going to live in a house and have a pool. And, you know, that'll be kind of boring. But I'm like, I do not have a house, a pool, or a husband, you know. And it is just very different, I think, to be like, you know, millennial versus like my parents' generation, baby boomers. This is just completely different, like type of lifestyle even available, you know?
But it's also very different because your comedic voice is so sharp and so focused and so unique. And I know that's not the sort of thing that comes easily, finding your own voice and having such a distinct point of view as you do. I was listening to the record wondering, who were the comics who turned you on when you were first getting into this? Who did you want to be before you became a great stand-up? Who did you have in mind as the kind of avatar you wanted to lean towards?
There's definitely a few people that I think were very influential to me early on. One of them is Margaret, who you mentioned, Margaret Cho. You know, I used to watch her specials in my freshman dorm, and, you know, she was talking about, like, hanging out with, you know, the queer community in San Francisco and, you know, just very dirty, but also super smart. And I loved and admired her. Another person that like feels kind of surprising to say, because he's so different than me, is Marc Maron. Like, totally. I started stand up in 2012, and that was like at the peak, like buzz of WTF. So I got into the podcast, and then I got into Marc Maron's stand up, and he had this like emotional realness that I had not heard in comedy before. You know, and you know, particularly in some of his stories about like his dysfunctional, toxic relationships and stuff, like he just really put it all out there and was not afraid to be dark. So definitely him, you know. And then like there's other comics that inspired me a lot, but I wouldn't say that I have anything really like super similar to them. Like Maria Bamford is one of my favorite comics of all time, but like
me too.
She's in her own category. Nobody is doing what she's doing, you know.
I agree. No, I share a birthday with her, and that's one of the reasons why I'll never totally believe astrology, because we're made of different stardust. But I love how much you talk about astrology here. I love that you finally explained the game MASH to me, which is a boy I never understood. I had to wait for your record to understand it. But I think my favorite part of the whole record is you talking about the Christian camp you attended as a teenager. It seems like that's all the different yous converging at one time. I have to ask, is this story true? You talk about being a teenager in this Christian camp and that they told you that you would go to hell for being bisexual. Did that really happen?
Yeah. So like, I can't. Okay. So I would say that it was 85% true story, you know, like
right on,
little
yeah.
comedic embellishments.
Oh, I get it.
Like,
yeah.
I think what happened in real life. So like in the special, I talk about telling the pastor that I was bi and his reaction. And I think what happened in real life was the pastor was like talking about how, you know, gay people were going to go to hell and stuff. And I ended up asking my camp counselor in a more personal way, you know, like the Bible study woman that was in charge of like the girls' cabin. And I sort of probably was like, what if I were bisexual, you know? So, you know, I think with comedy, sometimes like you can capture the emotional truth of something, but like, you know, sometimes you'll like heighten it a little bit to make it more funny. But yeah, it's mostly true. I definitely went to Christian camp. In some ways, Christian camp was even more weird than like I could describe in a comedy special. It's so strange. They had, I got in trouble at Christian camp.
What happened?
Guess what I got in trouble for?
No idea.
Okay. Well, my first guess, if I was somebody who heard of this, I would be like, oh, probably like smoking weed or hooking up with someone. No, I got in trouble because I went for a walk with a guy and we prayed together, but I was the one who led the prayer. And it's inappropriate. Yeah, it's inappropriate for a woman to, or a girl, I guess, at that point, but like a woman to lead a man in prayer, because like the man is supposed to be the spiritual authority and he's not.
You went to one of those St. Paul camps. You went to one of those St. Paul camps where women bad, men good.
It was just like very traditional views of like gender roles, you know, like not even so much like. Yeah, I wouldn't even say that they like were emphasizing that women were bad. It was just that like women stay home and women have babies and like, you know, women knit and just like kind of all that type of stuff, you know?
Right. I mean, but it's interesting to me because I kind of feel like you probably wouldn't be the comedian you are if you didn't have the curious childhood you had. I mean, I eventually couldn't make sense of being the child of two ex-clergy, and I couldn't afford the therapy, so I had to start telling jokes about it. And it
yeah,
seems like
I get that.
It's like you've done the most noble thing an artist can do. You've taken your dysfunction and turned it into gold.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I have had like I would say like I've just had a lot of like weird chapters of life, and I didn't even explore them all in the special, but you know, like I do feel like I've had so many strange adventures, like everything from like moving to Costa Rica to like getting married and getting divorced when I was 23 to like taking a year off to like build boats, you know, like mm-hmm. I did a lot of weird stuff, like especially when I was young. So it continues to be like a rich source of material, which is probably good because I don't really have dysfunctional romantic relationships anymore at this point.
What's that like?
I retired after the guy in the special from having like dysfunctional relationships, and I end up getting into a relationship with someone who's really sweet and great, but like I'm not going to be able to make fun of him that much. So I'm circling back at like this point in the new writing I'm doing. I weirdly am writing a lot about religion, which I guess it must be like a very deep in there theme for me.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank God, because now's the time for it. I mean, there's a lot of people who are deconstructing the crazy things they were raised in and want to be able to laugh about it rather than feel shame and guilt. I have to say, you nailed the solution to legalized abortion. It's something I've actually said for a while. Black male mansion. I mean, you made it so funny. I've been screaming it. Like, why is it so hard to, I call it bribe back better. Why can't we, the people, bribe these motherfuckers better than lobbyists can? And go ahead and do that to get 60 votes in the Senate.
Yeah, the citizens lobby or something. We just like do a GoFundMe to like buy off senators. I think that's a good idea. I mean, it is so weird that, you know, it's like this guy Joe Manchin, like he's the king. I think they probably all coordinate behind the scenes a little more than it seems like they do in public. But you know, it's like he gets to make all of the decisions about, you know, the future of, I don't know, womanhood, our country, climate change, you know,
the filibuster, all of it. Yeah, I mean, he's the most powerful president we've had since Vladimir Putin, I guess.
But although, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Go ahead, please.
I was just going to say, like, you know, I do think, like, I somewhat subscribe to the rotating villain theory that I think it's like, if there wasn't Joe Manchin, like, there would be another Joe Manchin. And if the numbers that we needed to get big stuff through, you know, if we had, like, three extra people, there would be three Joe Manchins.
Used to be
Joe Lieberman was the guy, you know. But
he and Kyrsten Sinema are like, you know, they're both platooned at second base. They take turns playing the position. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I really appreciate how fearless you have been in discussing this horrible, stupid, ancient, destructive, pointless conflict, a deeply unspiritual conflict between the government of Israel and the government of Palestine, both of whom are douchebags, both governments. And I'm curious, you know, you're fearless about it, but what's been the challenge for you as a funny person of talking about this when it's so hard to find humor on so many days?
So, you know, I haven't done that much stand-up about it. I actually did some stand-up about it tonight for the first time.
Right on.
And honestly, that was, I think I've been sitting with it for long enough that like I found an angle that could make people laugh. And that was fun. But usually I have just like on Twitter, like I've just talked about it, you know, kind of in sincere terms, which I'm okay with. Like, to me, being a comedian doesn't make me not a person who cares about other things too.
Right.
And, you know, like when we see, you know, this scale of innocent children dying, like, you know, I think that, you know, we should all speak up and hopefully get our government to see some sense here, you know.
Can you tell me what is Pass the Hat? That seems like a really cool initiative.
So there's something I learned about this morning. I've already been doing it, so I can talk about it. So Pass the Hat is an initiative made up by a comedian in LA. Her first name's Erin. I'm looking up her last name so that I don't mess it up. But my friend Marcia Belsky, who I'm sure you know. Erin Hadamer made this up. So my friend Marcia Belsky posted that she was paired with a family in Gaza to help them raise money to, you know, get medical care and ultimately to leave Gaza, which is what they want to do, to be, you know, out of harm's way.
Yeah.
So then, you know, I wrote them and I got connected with the family. And how it works is, like, I don't want to say influencers, but like, honestly, influencers, creative people who have a larger social media following, take, you know, one GoFundMe and just be the person that's like responsible for plugging that GoFundMe, you know, like making videos about it and just getting it out there. And for me, like, I think that's something that's really useful because I've been giving $10 to a lot of, you know, GoFundMes here and there and, you know, just trying to be like, what can I do? What can I do? And so now I'm just working with this one specific family, fundraising for them and, you know, other artists, other comedians, like they're working for their family, you know? So I just like, I'm just trying to plug it online. Like I did an email to my friends today and the situation with this family, she's a mom. Her name is Sama. She's 42. She has six daughters. She is a graphic designer who teaches like other people in Gaza how to be freelancers, like how to do mm-hmm. like tech and artist freelancing. She has the STEM degree. And so it's her husband, their six daughters, and then both grandmas, his mom and her mom. And they're trying to go to Egypt, and like the border crossing fee for Egypt, they have to literally bribe the guards to get across. And
of course,
so they have to pay the bribe, you know, for 10 people, and then, you know, get housing once they get there. And then also, you know, get medical care for the injuries that they've sustained, and also, you know, like the treatment that they haven't been able to get for, like, you know, especially her elderly mom's, like, more, you know, ongoing health issues. So
it's amazing.
Yeah. So for people who, you know, would be interested in checking it out, I posted the GoFundMe and the link in my bio on Instagram, which is it's kate.willett with two L's and two T's on Instagram. It's in there, and you can read more about Sama's story and her family. Or if you're interested in like being a person who pairs with the family, it's called Pass the Hat. And feel free to just like DM me directly on Twitter, and I'll connect you with them.
See, this is why I love the stories like this. Someone who escaped Christianity, and look what a good Christian you are now. It's so heartwarming.
It is kind of weird, because it's like, I do think that like I do think I do kind of have like some fundamentalism still. It just expresses itself through socialism,
that's true Christianity to me. It's as socialist as it gets. And let me quote you from Twitter. I saw some dude say there is nowhere in the world where Arabs and Jews live in peace. And that guy really needs to come check out Brooklyn. The new special is called Loopholes. Kate Willett, it is such a pleasure to have you back on our show. Please, let's not wait for a plague to get you back again. We'll always platform you and promote anything you're doing. What is the best way for our evil army of the night to follow you and keep up with all your work?
Thank you so much. So I'm on Instagram at kate.willett, two L's and two T's. On Twitter, I'm just Kate Willett, all one word. And, you know, I post my tour schedule and a bunch of stand-up clips on there. And if you want to check out my special, which I hope you do, it's on Amazon and Apple TV. You can also buy it on YouTube. It's like 45 minutes long. I think it's pretty funny.
It's great. I've been listening to it nonstop. It's so funny, so smart, such great writing.
Thank you so much. Yeah, and you know, it's there's a lot of like sex and relationship stuff on there, which is like most of my Instagram. If you like more, you know, political stuff, I do that more on Twitter. So follow me both places.
Okay. Yeah. Please come back and see us again. The album is called Loopholes, the special too. Kate, thank you for joining us. Really a pleasure.
Thank you so much, Sean.
We'll be right back with your calls and comedian Rhonda Hansom. This is Progress.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Welcome back. We're at 866-997-4748. You know, I know it was wrong to say it. Well, I wrote in my journal that I had met Kim Jong-un, but that's been fixed now, and I'm not going to talk about it. It's been replaced, and it's been removed. I refuse to say anything more. Hey, we are about to welcome back to the show one of our favorite comedians. I've loved Rhonda Hansom since I started in this monster of a game. She's a great comic and a writer and a director and an actor. She's opened for Anita Baker and Diana Ross and Aretha Franklin. She does great solo shows, and she'll be performing in Lincoln Center tomorrow night for a benefit show, which means, I guess, the Met Gala's your opening act. Rhonda Hansom, welcome back to SiriusXM.
I'm black, y'all!
Thank God. How are you, Queen?
I'm great. I'm just trying to figure out what the heck is on Kristi Noem's mind. I mean, when George Santos says, stop the cap, girl, I mean, you know. You know you got a liar on your hands. And you just mentioned about Kim Jong-un. I mean, she said, my team brought this to my attention. As soon as my team brought this to my attention, we adjusted it. She didn't say she didn't meet with him, but she's talking like she didn't do the audio book already. Like she hasn't even read her own book that those things are in there.
And I mean, she's already recorded it. She recorded it. Like
I know.
She recorded the audio book. Like she said it, she did it, and then she got caught. So now it doesn't exist. She's not denying it. She's not apologizing. She's just saying 2 + 2 is in fact 5. And I don't care if I can't prove it. That's her whole thing.
And for a person who does not like animals as much as she does, she really needs to, she needs some kind of protective order against goats, horses, dogs. She's wild. She's wild. But,
and now
you know,
she's famous for three things. She's famous for three things, or four things now. She's been banned from setting foot in 17% of her state by the reservations. The Indians don't want her on their own land, as she's the governor. She had sex with Corey Lewandowski, which I don't even know what to say about that. She murdered a puppy, and now she lied about staring down Kim Jong-un. And all of these things will only help her if she's trying to become Donald Trump's vice president. That's what this whole pageant is about.
He's already said he loves her. He says that bitch has got tits, ass, and balls, you know, and he's never said that about
her. Is that what he said? Really? I had no idea.
No, he did say that he loves her and, you know, that she's always been supporting him. I think she's on to something. She's captured our attention and she's pushed the rap beat off the main topic, you know, of conversation, because she's Peter called her a psychotic loony. I mean,
that's right.
She's really perfect for the vice presidency.
Well, I want to play you another clip because here's some news. Time to feel the burn. This man is ready for more. 81 years old or 82, Bernie Sanders has announced, he's 82. He has announced today he plans to run for re-election at age 82. Give a listen. A6.
Let me thank the people of Vermont from the bottom of my heart for giving me the opportunity to serve in the United States Senate. It has been the honor of my life. Today, I am announcing my intention to seek another term. And let me take a few minutes to tell you why. As the chairman of the Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions Committee, as part of the U.S. Senate Democratic Leadership Team, as a senior member of the Veterans Committee, the Budget Committee, and the Environment and Public Works Committee, I have been and will be, if reelected, in a strong position to provide the kind of help that Vermonters need in these difficult times.
I love it. He's 82 and he's going to run for another 6-year Senate term. And nobody, Rhonda, is saying he's too old. This is Bernie. Nobody thinks 82 is too old when it's him.
Well, has he really accomplished things for his constituents there? That's what I'd like to know. Do they feel like he is worthy?
That's a very good point. Well, he's the longest serving congressional independent in U.S. history. So they keep on sending him back. So, I mean, it seems like the people in Vermont don't want him to retire, but we'll see if he gets primaried. And again, he's not a Democrat. He caucuses with the Dems and he ran for president as a Dem, but he's still an independent. And Vermonters still seem to like him, and so does most of everybody else. I mean, and if anything, it helps Joe Biden, I think, showing another guy who's older than Joe Biden, who's very capable and does a fine job. I'm really over the ageism. If you're 90 and you can be good at your job, then you should be allowed to work at your job. What are you going to do, watch TV all day?
Well, I'm not going to disagree with you on that, John, but my concern is for who are they bringing along to take their place, because they can't stay there forever. You really have to start, you know, I don't want to use the word grooming. I mean, the word has such a bad connotation, but who is going to come along? Who's going to, I don't even want to say pick up the torch, but someone, we need people who have ideals. I mean, they don't have to actually believe in them, but at least act like they have ideals. And young people, younger people, I feel like we are dealing with a generation of the disillusioned now, and we really need for the the old guard to start bringing in new people who feel like they can actually help our country, which is like teetering. They're teetering on fascism.
I agree. I agree with that. I agree with that, but I still feel like if someone is doing a good job and they're old, it's not a deal breaker for me. I can handle people being old. I'm more afraid of the old ideas. And Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders are both younger than Herbert Hoover Economics, which Donald Trump is running on this year.
Yes. Well, the old ideas are really calcified, John, and every word I feel like is loaded now. I want to say progressive, but that has its own connotation. So we need people who are going to start, for lack of a better phrase, start doing the right thing and not be corrupt. I just really hate the idea that I feel like there is so much corruption in our political system that, you know, it's almost impossible to get away from it, and that to be idealistic and want to do the right thing it's naive.
I completely agree. Do you want to talk to some of our evil army of the night, Miss Rhonda? A lot of our listeners want to say hi. Let me go to Paul. Great. Paul in Jersey. Welcome to SiriusXM with Rhonda. Hello.
How you doing, John? How you doing, Rhonda?
Great. Great to hear from you, Paul.
Good. No,
very
I just
good, man.
I just
hello.
Had a, that first on your first segment, right? Was that did the guy say? I was running around. Did the guy say that Ted Cruz had mistresses?
He was researching the story in 2016 about Ted Cruz's mistresses, and he told a couple of the right-wing tabloids that he was researching the story. He was in Texas talking to various women, and the tabloids all told each other. So the next thing he knew, he was getting calls from Steve Bannon and Roger Stone, and then eventually the National Enquirer. So they actually were chasing him down to find out about the story, all for very different reasons.
I'm sorry, I just all of a sudden just started feeling queasy. I'm sorry.
Sure. Okay. Well, that happens when people talk to me all the time. Don't worry about it.
Tech Cruz with women? No, but I thought that was just the funniest thing.
It's okay.
But anyway, no, I just wanted to talk about that one.
Tech Cruz having mistresses?
Yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, I remember the Cuban mistress crisis very well. I was doing a lot of jokes about time. And, you know, but the thing was, he didn't want, the National Enquirer offered to let him write the story for them. He didn't want to have his name there. So he gave them some of his notes. And then they just took the story and made it up that he had five mistresses and lied about the whole thing. And he read his own research in the Enquirer. But when all of this happened with the trial, he realized he was related to that whole scam they pull.
That's hilarious. No, and the other thing I wanted to ask was, I think I did speak to you one time. I said that this guy, the guy we will not speak about, he was not going to see prison, but I told him he will be seeing jail.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's it. I think I'm a phone call away from I told you so. Because he's acting up the way he is.
You're saying you think he's going to go to jail?
Like,
you think he's going to jail? You mean?
For contempt.
Okay. Rhonda, do you think this guy's ever going to jail? I don't think Donald Trump's ever going to. I don't think it's going to happen.
No.
I don't need it to happen. I'd love it if it did. But
I don't think he's not going to prison.
What are you saying?
I think he has the complexion for protection as far as not going to jail, John.
No, I'm talking about him going to jail, not prison. I mean, like, you know, he gets sentenced and all that other stuff. I don't think that's going to happen. But if they find him in contempt, if they find him in contempt 1 in 10, they're going to be like, yeah, you're going, you know, you got 3 days in jail or something like that.
Wait a second. Going to jail and not prison. Happen. What do you mean? Like, they throw him in county for a week? Like, he just goes to county for a weekend?
For a day or two or something, you know, like when, you know, for contempt of court.
Okay. Yeah, I could see that happening. I mean, maybe. He'd fundraise off of it. So I don't know, you know, but again, like, I'm in the minority on this, Rhonda. I don't need to see this guy in jail. I don't need to see him in a jumpsuit. I don't need to see if orange clashes with orange. I just don't want him in power hiring judges anymore for my country.
Well, you know, I actually think that even if there was some fluke of fate and the judicial system and he actually ended up in that orange jumpsuit and going to jail, I am sure, I am absolutely positive something would happen like happened with Weinstein, where all of a sudden he would be, you know, let out on some technicality, or say maybe having been president or something like that.
Yeah, he'd have a good Cosby or Weinstein reason to get out. Paul, thank you for the call. Let me go to Mark, who's calling from the land of Nome in South Dakota. Hello, Mark. You're on Sirius XM with Rhonda and me. Welcome.
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for taking
Hello.
The call.
Thank you.
So, yeah, it's kind of been a lot crazy last couple of weeks with this whole situation. Can you hear me?
Indeed. Yes, I can. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So it's obviously been the dominant story in the state for this whole time and so forth. And the reactions are pretty much universal that, like, we know it's spin, like the whole, oh, this is how it is in the country. Everybody who has any ties to, you know, grew up or currently lives on or, you know, ever lived on a farm or farm adjacent says, no, this is not like what she makes it out to be. Like, the only putting down a dog stories they've ever heard of are like truly the old Yeller type situations where, you know,
right,
you know, pretty much a dead dog walking at the time and it's out of mercy and so forth.
Same here. I never heard of someone shooting a dog because they sucked at training the dog. I've never heard of that before.
No. And there's actually two theories, main competing theories about this whole thing. One is that she Trump is obviously not a fan of dogs. He's, I think, the only president to have never had one. And there's, like, I don't know if you've seen that supercut of him, like, you know, insulting people by calling them a dog or not. But
yeah, I've
that's
seen that.
Theory one, that she thought this would appeal to him. It's specifically as an audience to him. The other is a theory, and this has, like, kind of been going around, I think it got mentioned in a Vox story where, like, the state Senate minority leader mentioned this, that virtually everyone in it's, like, one of the worst-kept rumors around that this happened and that she was trying to get out of it before it became like an Apple research thing. So she was like trying to spin it. So she was like trying to do the whole spin thing so she could, you know, put it out before it becomes a, say she gets the VP and then, you know, it comes out later and she
this lady's a mess is what you're telling me. This lady's a yard sale. I mean, she just sounds, I mean, like, are your friends embarrassed? Yeah.
To be honest, everyone who's listening should be rooting for her to get the nomination.
I know.
So she is, if I were you, I would be much more worried of like a Tim Scott or a Marco Rubio, or though I think there's some technicality about like how two Floridians can't be on the ticket or something.
Yeah, they've already. So Marco has a residency problem. Marco would have to leave. He would have to
resign his
citizenship of Florida while serving as their senator to be Donald Trump's running mate. Because Dick Cheney lived in Texas, and he legally had to change his residency to Wyoming to run as Bush's running mate.
So I knew that. I thought there was some legal thing about something to do with the ticket or the Electoral College or whatever it is. But I would definitely, like, of all the, you know, names that get bandied about, she is by far the most, this is just the tip of the iceberg with her. Like, I could talk all day about her corruption. In fact, if she ever, like, picks up, most of the theories that she's kind of out of the running now, but if she ever gets back, I'm going to give you two names. There's the number one I would say is Corey Allen Heidelberger of the Dakota Free Press. I've been trying to, I think he's writing a book or something right now because I've been checking his blog ever since mid-January. And it's pretty
I
much
hope he hurries.
Down.
Okay.
I was going to say, was kind of hoping I'd go to his blog for, like, you know, when it was kind of disappointed he did it right before the legislative session, because he's a great source for keeping tabs on the fuckery that goes on in Pierre. But, and okay. Then the other is Tom Lawrence. He wrote a great piece. He is a local journalist, but he kind of freelances for the Daily Beast. He did a fantastic article that I think everyone here should read about this. It pretty much sums it up as good as anyone could, and kind of goes with what I've been saying all along, is that she is not nearly as popular, let alone in this state alone, as she claims to be.
Like, oh, I know. That's exciting.
Yeah, it's like literally she won it the first time by just by the hair of her, of, you know, just by a fingernail. And then the second time, basically the only people that truly liked her were the interlopers that saw her on Fox News and COVID and
That's it. I mean, Rhonda, this woman's in the running to be vice president because Donald Trump thinks she's hot. That's literally the only reason.
Oh, and there's the great, I'm trying to think of where it was, but literally she has changed her appearance so much to look more like Melania, like over the past several years. Like she's got the extensions, the veneers. Like back when she first got elected to Congress, she had pretty much the Karen cut.
Well, that's where you've lost me. How does looking more like Trump's wife make Trump like you? Mark, we got to hit a break.
It's her logic. It's her logic, not mine. But yeah, she has gotten a whole lot more. I realize she was Snow Queen back in the day, but she has gotten a whole lot more glammed up over the years double down on that aspect.
I'm not here to make fun of a woman's looks. She's very, very attractive, and I wouldn't fuck her with Ann Coulter's dick. That's all I can say about that. But Rhonda, this woman is banned from setting foot on 17% of her own state. She's known as a puppy murderer, and now she's just going on this media tour pushing this book, and every journalist is just saying, lady, you lied about meeting Kim Jong-un. How can you show your face? It seems like her chances are slight.
Well, I think she's got a chance, John. She did this book to show to everyone that she's a decisive person. When she's ready to make a decision, she decides. And I think will endear her to those in the MAGA community who feel like cruelty is the point. She's knocking off horses, goats, dogs. I mean, the pet cemetery is overrun at this point.
We got to take a break. But when we come back, I'd like to ask you about Tim Scott, because this guy is doing some tap dancing, Rhonda, and it's embarrassing for me. And there's a lot of shit I'd like to say, but I'm too nice to, and I'm going to leave it up to you. Kristen Welker on Meet the Press had to ask him 6 times if he would accept the results of the election. And he would not answer. He really wants to have a job propping up a fat racist.
We gotta go. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Thea. This is SiriusXM. I'm John Fugelsang. Peace.